Log Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Poet Runner. I'm Rafael Alvarado, and we have our host here, Richard Modiano, who will be introducing Hilda Weiss.
Hilda, thank you for taking time to talk to us today. What I wanted to get into is your own work as a poet. And I know you have a chapbook, Optimism About Trees, and before the show started, we were chatting a bit, and you said you had a new manuscript. What is the state of that manuscript?
It's still in the development stage. I have, I think, something like 60 poems. I've been organizing and reorganizing them and finding ways they talk to each other, which is still generating more poems. So it's in the review process, and I'm beginning to look for publishers.
So and these poems are is this like a from a the whole of your writing career, or are these poems that are more recent?
Most of these are recent poems, and it started off being a collection that was going to be, you know, sort of the what I've done that's the best kind of thing, and I've been working with Sarah McClay over a number of years, and she's a wonderful mentor. And she pointed out that the poems that were about family issues were some of the most powerful in the group. And she asked me if I had more of those. And that was, I think, January of 2020. And you know what happened in 2020? The COVID.
Yes.
Around. And I ended up using that year for a lot of writing and really deep exploration into family relationships that I'd experienced growing up. So it became a few of the poems that had already been written, which she had identified as being super interesting to someone experiencing a life through poetry, and then the additions that have continued to fill out the story to my satisfaction and to help it be something that would be valuable to others reading it.
Well, I know that family is something that virtually all poets will return to something about their family. I mean, there is always there are births to be celebrated, deaths to be mourned. We have our significant others that we want to cherish, and you know, and every family has skeletons in its closet. So that has been a sort of a fertile ground for cultivating poetry, and each family is different. Each experience with one's family differs according to time and place, culture, ethnicity, religious background. And we learn a lot about what it is to be human when we look at our families. And to me, the challenge is we come from a specific family with our own unique experience of that family. And the challenge is to convey the emotions that we have experienced to somebody else who comes from a totally different background, a different age range, a different culture. And I know that your poetry does that quite well, because it is clear, vivid, distinct. It is not like a Chinese wall of obscurities that you have to scale in order to get to its meaning. And was this something that you were totally conscious of when you approached your writing as a poet? I mean, you wanted to be understood, but did you? I mean, I know there are poets who say, "I want people to work at what they have to what's in the poem," and then there are other poets that say, "I want to go directly to the heart of the matter." And I know that your poetry goes directly to the heart of the matter, which is something that I really like. And the other type of poetry, sure, it's interesting and it's challenging, but really the poetry, at least for me, that grips me is that poetry that is sort of naked, as Allen Ginsberg once put it. And was this a conscious decision when you started writing poetry? I mean, because when somebody starts as a poet, there are many roads that you can travel, but you picked this one. What was your reason for that?
I don't think there was a quote-unquote reason. It's seemed that way. But then I'm going to back into, yes, there was a reason for it, because truth has always been extremely important to me. And I have been, I've typically called myself clumsy or blunt, but I tend to try to get to the point, the truth, the issue at hand directly. And so that happens in my work. And if anything, I try to add to it the complexity that allows the reader to see more than just the details that happened, but the bigger perspective or the contradictory perspectives or the what didn't happen, which makes it richer for the reader. One reader can get just the physical facts or details, and another reader can get different layers of meaning as they explore the different.
No, go ahead. I was going to.
Yeah.
Well, there.
It's a choice
in,
to do that.
In any. In. Go ahead.
I just said I've been working on that.
Well, one of the things that that is in a good poem for me is it can be appreciated on the surface, but at the same time there is a meaning underneath that, so that a lot of people, let's face it, you know, I recently read that reading used to be one of the top 10 hobbies of the American people, and now it's like toward the bottom 100. And poetry, of course, is like something that people are, for whatever reason or another, turned off by or intimidated by or can't relate to for whatever reasons that they may have. But when somebody comes across a poet like yourself, where you can get into the poem at least on initially on the surface level, there is something in there. There's a hook in those poems that makes you want to go back and read them again because there is something else happening. In other words, the poem is directing the reader's attention to what's happening beneath the surface. And I think that's a skill that you show in the poems of yours that I've read. And at this point, to illustrate what we've been talking about, I wonder if you could read something for us, one of your works that you may have at hand.
Okay, I'm not sure I can illustrate one that really does that beautiful job of getting to deeper levels, but I'll start with this one. It's called Streetwise in L.A. Of course they look like wings, these long, dismembered arms blown down in the rain. They crack like old shoe leather in the sun. The sidewalk is crowded, great shards, small chips, massive debris after the wind of the night, a mass of red fish, old roots, a mermaid's hair spread out on the rocks, rudders and oars broken loose from a ship, and one lone wave rising off the meridian, a pelvic bone. It could be a saddle, the waist of one impaled on a fence, a slide down cement steps, black pavement through a pianist's fingers, three forks, one spoon neatly stacked, a battlefield of plows and rakes, too many palm fronds to trip on.
That's a beautiful piece, and the imagery is so rich and fresh and the juxtaposition of all of the elements. And I think that juxtaposition is what tells the reader that there is something else happening here. And I, when I was director of Beyond Baroque, I often would introduce a reader by talking about how the challenge for a poet is to put a lot of work. I mean, you have the poem itself is generally short. Poetry books are, the average is like maybe 90 to 120 pages, and then a novel you have 250, maybe to even 400 pages. And a poet, as I explain in my introductions, is somebody that condenses all of those novelistic nuances by supercharging the language of her work. And that is really what I see happening in that kind of poem. I mean, the language is supercharged, and there are so many allusions that you can pursue in different directions. And one of the pleasures for people that like to read poetry is to tease these out, because all good poems are worth reading more than once. Not to put down our prose brethren, but once you've read the chapter in a novel, you go to the next one, and you don't go back to that chapter unless you get confused about the plot or something. But with a poem, you go back to it again. And with a good poem, you go back to it again. And that is something that I see in your work. And in your chapbook, Optimism About Trees, that's still available, I take it, isn't it? I hope.
Yes, it is.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to that at the end, because I like to encourage our listeners to support the poets by buying their work, and especially to support the presses that publish it, because really small presses are the ones that are keeping poetry alive now. The big publishers have very little interest in it. Their catalogs have maybe in the course of a year they might publish two or three books of poetry. That are new books of poetry. I mean, they will reprint the classics. We will get Keats, Shelley, and so on again and again, because, one, they're in the public domain, they're required in classes and so on. But it's the small press publisher that is keeping poetry alive. But we'll get back to that at the end. Course of assembling this manuscript, and this is something that we haven't really touched on with other poets, you're going to be putting this manuscript together from a large range of poems. You mentioned you had 60 poems, and you're going to shape that into a manuscript. What is the criterion for putting a manuscript like that together? Just what is the process involved?
Well, this is my first attempt, so I'm sure there are many processes. For me, it was gathering together the poems that I already had that related to the topic of family issues. And then, as I said, figuring out how to arrange them so they talk to each other. So it is primarily chronological, but some of the poems are not related. In fact, I've been working with Mariano Zaro, and he saw the poems as functioning on three different types. One that was really at the core of the trauma in the family. One that was one type of poem that was more about the family's stories or issues or environment. And a third group that was more dispersed, but related. So I tried to construct a pattern or weave the book in by carrying those three energies each section, and not having all of the horrific stuff together, and not having all of the transformational stuff together, but weaving them together so that they talk to each other and you can hopefully see how the development of the situation is happening and the people.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that is of particular interest, I think, to poets. I know we have a lot of poet listeners and who have written poems individually. They've been published in magazines and so on, but they haven't put their own book together. And some are daunted about how they would start to do that. And I think what you've just said will give them at least a handle on at least one approach. As Hilda mentioned earlier, listeners, there are several different paths you can take to putting your book together, but you have to pick which road you're going to take and stick to it. And I think that what Hilda has just described is one of the ways you can do that. So that is really good information to have, I think. And it's also of interest to see the creative process at work. And now for a moment, I'd like to return to the individual poem about where that poem comes from for you. We know that, you know, somebody has a vivid dream, a poet has a vivid dream that excites them, and they set pen to paper or they sit at their keyboard and they start writing and they start working on that initial inspiration and eventually craft it into a finished piece. So for you, where does the poem start?
They start all sorts of different places. So I do have dream poems. The one that I just read started on a walk where I was seeing all of these shapes of fallen palm branches and just trying to describe how unique they were and realizing that they did reflect on aspects of the city of Los Angeles. And sometimes a poem comes from feeling that just sort of happens, and I just like, oh, I have to jot that down. And it becomes a poem. Mm-hmm. I can read you one of those that I'm very fond of. Okay. What happened in this case is my former husband had passed away. This was 1998. And we owned a karate studio together. I was doing some cleanup work late in the afternoon. Everyone had left. I was just there in the studio, exhausted, worn out from all the grieving, and yet realizing that my life was moving on. So this poem is called Brown Trout. These moments, these sometimes moments of joy and success, of beauty and surprise, how embarrassing. I am so unaccustomed to good. Moments of awe cumber me. Still, beginning to see, they occur and occur. Perhaps they swim like young brown trout. When the eye and mind learn to separate fish from water, suddenly the fish are everywhere.
Yeah, I could. Oh, yeah, that is really nice. And it's
so there I was.
The emotion is so contained. It's not sentimental, and that's one thing I liked about it. But the emotion is contained. It is there. It's almost burning, but it's like, You've got it. You've got the emotion in that poem. I want to say that it's tuned just right. I think that's the way of putting it, because there's a strong feeling there, and strong feelings can, you know, burst out. They can sort of decline into sentiment, or just go all over the place. And it seems to me the art of this poem is to have this balance. And I saw that balance in there, and especially the really wonderful metaphor of the young trout swimming, and the idea of motion, and the idea of something of change, of transition to a different state is implicit in that poem. And that is something that I like about your work in general, because there is this, there is, I don't want to say it's exactly, it's more than an optimism. It is a sort of an affirmation, let's put it that way. It's an affirmation of life. And I've seen that in your other poems. And it's, you know, you many poets can, Tyro poets tend to say, I believe in life, but they don't really know how to give us that that feeling of believing in life. You know, it's one thing to just state it, but it's another thing to embody that feeling in a, in language, and to transmit through language that feeling to the reader. And to me, that's what, you know, that is sort of the sine qua non of being a poet. You have that, that talent, that ability to do so. And that comes across in this poem. So thank you for that, Hilda. And one of the other things is, you know, when another question that I had was, when you do your first draft, do you throw out all of the words, or do you just start with the seed of an idea and expand upon it? I know there are different. I know some poets start writing furiously, and then they go back and read what they've read, and they began, and they begin to cut it down to make their revisions. There, substitute a word, and but other poets write down. This is the, they write down sort of the core or the pith of the poem, and then expand it.
I think I've done both, but I tend mostly to start with a small piece and just keep working on it to find how you know what it wants to tell me. So often what happens in my writing life is the pressure builds up inside. It's almost conscious, but it gets to a point where it's like, okay, there's a feeling that has to get written down. And I just start, and it comes out, and it can be sometimes quite clean and sometimes quite messy. I don't really have any prediction or explanation. I just know that if it's clean, I look at it and say, thank you, and put it away and come back to it to make sure that it has said everything it wants to say. And if it's messy, I just say, thank you, and put it away and bring it back a little sooner to work on.
So that's another interesting thing. I know that some poets finish their piece, put it away for a time, and then come back and look at it again with sort of with new eyes. So that it surprises even the poet who is actually the writer of that poem. Have you had that experience?
I know I've had that experience, but I can't say, oh, yeah, I remember in this poem. But, yeah, that's the version that I have more is, like, I wrote a poem recently where I had – three parts of it, I thought they were actually maybe different poems, just starter things for the journal notebook. And then I looked at them a couple days later and said, oh, this part talks to that part. They probably go together. Let's see how they go together. Let's try this. Let's break this this stanza up because it needs to be opened. It's really more like a separate paragraph in here. And then I let it go again and came back to it and realized that the third part kind of fit too. So then I had three pieces to a poem, and I showed it to Wayne, my partner, and he said, yeah, I can understand this. It makes sense. He's very good at being able to tell me if it is obscure. And the third part was the least clear to him. And I could see when he was talking about it, some of the parts that were unclear. It was about climbing a hill with new grass. Well, what is new grass? Well, first of all, it's kind of a boring phrase. So I worked on that last stanza quite a bit more and worked on integrating it theme-wise with the first two stanzas and got a draft that I'm saying, yes, this was a couple days' work. It's in elapsed time, not in total hours, because I don't actually spend a lot of sitting at the desk struggling over something all at one time. It tends to work better for me to give it a shot, let it go for a bit, and bring it back and work on it some more.
And that's a pretty sensible way of going at it, I think, because there's always the danger of polishing it too much, leaving out some rough edges. Some rough edges are always good in a poem. Some things that are sort of like, oh, you know, it's not going to go down all that easy. There's going to be a little spice in it. We're going to put some peppers in it for you, and that's always, I mean, as a reader, that's always fun to encounter. It sort of livens things up, and that is, of course, a certain danger, is to over refine your original emotion so that it kind of gets lost. But from what the poems of yours that I've read, you know, I've never seen that really happen. So your process is, I mean, they're of all of the poets that we've talked to, they all have different processes, but they all have certain things in common. And for listeners who have been regular listeners, you will see what those are. And that process that you just described, Hilda, it works for you, and it could work for other people, I think. So poets that are listening, new poets that are listening, that's good advice, although Hilda didn't present it as advice, but I'm presenting it as advice for you to imitate. I mean, it's worth looking into the way poets create their work, because it can help you in your own journey as a poet. So we are almost out of time. And I wonder if we could end with another poem of yours, Hilda.
Okay. This one is called Small Pieces. Today will be hot. I walk. Nothing stands out. Everything goes into the chopper. Extinguished. The mind, out of habit, tries to be safe. Catches. Releases. Dogs connected to owners. Eyes looking away. A man hunched forward, smelling of cigarettes. To be silent, to walk, to forget. That is the best way. I was a child. My father, no. Chop up those pieces. Cut fruit into pies. Make jam. Walk. We do what the moment commands. In the morning, I get up, I walk.
And that's particularly a fine piece of work, I think. And it's like, I think it was Kenneth Cook who said to let your language be fresh and true, and to let your compassion guide you. And Hilda, that is what I've gotten from your work, and I want to thank you again for giving up some of your time to talk to us today. We've been talking to Hilda Weiss. Her chapbook, Optimism About Trees, is available from Finishing Line Press. You can buy it directly from them at their website. And do support small presses. They are the, as I said earlier, they are the ones that are sustaining new poetry, fresh voices, and taking risks. So again, Hilda Weiss, thanks for your time, and I look forward to this new manuscript whenever it may appear.
Thank you very much, Richard. Thanks for having the conversation. It was very enjoyable for me.
Yes, I would like it too.
Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. That's it for this episode of Blog for Poet Runner. Thank you for listening. Please come again.